Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of our podcast. Today we're going to continue with the yamas, and we've reached the fourth out of the five yamas that we have in yoga, which is brahmacharya, which I think is abstinence, maybe, Monica? Is that a good way to say it?
Hi everyone, happy to be here again in our episode. Yes, it's the first thing that you think of when you hear of brahmacharya. Brahman, it's one's own self, the ultimate unchanging reality, the absolute consciousness, and of course it's also the Vedic god of creation. Or the Atman. They have another word for it. They have plenty of words for everything. And charya as in behavior or conduct or demeanor, attitude, that kind of thing. So in reality, brahmacharya means to stay true to one's own self or to be on the path of Brahma. So it only partially refers to a lifestyle that's characterized by abstinence. But indeed, abstinence is the first word that comes to mind when we hear about this yama, that actually means you know, to be on the path that leads to the to Brahman. So it's the behavior that draws us closer to the divine power, in short. And this entails a specific type of demeanor and some specific actions and some specific ways in which we carry ourselves to be closer to our own true self and to the Creator, right, to the Almighty. And ultimately, we will find out that it's it all boils down to the appropriate, the right use of energy, I would say. As in, not dissipate it, but rather preserve it for a higher purpose. Preserve this energy so that it serves us to propel us forward. And not to be spent in ways that aren't dignified or that draw us farther from the purpose. So roughly, that's it. Obviously, one of the very powerful types of energy that we have, that we own, and that we can master is the sexual one. So that's why we're associating brahmacharya with sexual abstinence, or better yet, or more accurately said, with sexual continence. That's why we do it, because it's about, brahmacharya is about preserving this energy, and not only preserving it, but actually transmuting it, sublimating it in such a way that it serves us better. So yeah. A lot of words for something quite simple, which I think is also a big red thread for the other yamas, right? Just as we've mentioned in our previous episode, which is not too much, just not too little, just the right amount, and equanimity, ultimately.
Balance, absolutely. Although I would argue maybe that this one is a bit, you know, could be a bit more challenging, or I don't know, because like if you say, oh, let's practice abstinence, which, and we talk about sexual abstinence, which I think that's very much reserved, let's say, for nuns and things like that. I don't know, but let's say, you know, we're looking at yamas. And we say, okay, that energy that comes from that should be conserved and better used somewhere else. I think that somewhere else needs to be very well understood and resonated with. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, otherwise I think it might be challenging to practice it. Also, I don't know if it really, you said continence or abstinence. I'm not sure if it really preaches abstinence. I feel like that could be something that not a lot of people would want to practice, maybe.
Yeah, indeed, more spiritual beings such as nuns and monks are the ones that are really good at preserving their energy and directing it towards a higher purpose, and evolving spiritually. And it's easier, obviously, for them to practice abstinence or continence, especially the sexual one, than it is for us who live in a society in 2024 in big cities with all the hustle and bustle and the temptations and the cravings and all of that. Yeah, it's a tough nut to crack. If we're single, of course it can also be translated as celibacy, if you will. Brahmacharya advises us to not mock, dissipate, distill, dilute, disperse our sexual energy, but rather to contain it. So if we are already in a relationship, it doesn't mean cessation of all sexual relationship with our partner, but it rather means practicing sexual relationships or having sex in the right amount with the right purpose at the right time and with caution, being cautious and having in mind the spiritual elevation that yoga advises us to have in mind. So in fact, Brahmacharya appears when a person, they say it appears when a person completely controls their body and their mind, and they lead a life full of discipline. And there's this strong emphasis on the control of the senses, and avoiding indulgence, in material pleasures and sexual pleasures. So of course, it's not about sexuality only. And they say that the real brahmachari, this person, a person who practices brahmacharya and embraces it fully, they will not feel any difference whether they're touching a woman or a piece of paper or a block of wood, they say. And of course, it's meant for both men and women, but as the prejudice goes, men fall much easier prey to these sexual temptations. Not sure if it's a prejudice, but from the two sexes, men are said to be, to be the ones who crave it more, who do it more, who think about it more. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't think it's always the case. It's just that since they're quite different to women, we might experience these cravings at different times, maybe. And with different rhythms than our partner or than other men in general. So maybe that's it. So of course there are still some traditions that talk about where this renunciation of sex and marriage is mandatory if you want to be a proper spiritual being, a monk, a sadhu, right, in India. And this celibacy is considered necessary for a monk's spiritual practice. And we can basically find it all over the world in different religions. The monastic life calls for this. But for a practitioner who is married or a householder, as they used to call them in India, it just means fidelity, right? So marital fidelity, not cheating on one's spouse. While for a celibate, for a single person, it means celibacy. And again, it all boils down to not doing anything in excess, enjoying pleasures moderately, whether they are, a glass of wine or some nice food or, having sex. Why not? So it's about taking just the right amount of everything. And this is, of course, so difficult, right? Why? Because in our modern society, we are bombarded with lustful temptations. And obviously, lust is not something that we only associate with sex or with carnal pleasures. No. So we have so much variety and so many options. And to me, it's all the more difficult in this contemporary society we live in. Yeah, it is how it is. Do you feel bombarded and surrounded with temptations at all times? And how do you see this?
Yeah, I think before I answer that, I was going to say, I feel like, you know, you were talking about this would be for monks or nuns, right? And things like that. And then if you're married, it's one thing versus if you're single. But I think maybe we should address the average person. It's not a monk, it's not a nun. Maybe they're not married, so, you know. So I think then it comes to maybe to your point, not necessarily practicing celibacy, but actually maybe being more mindful about the relations you build, I guess, and the quality of the relations, right? If we are to just translate that to the modern day, let's say, Western average person that we are, I guess, to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, of course. And do you feel like you fight a lot of temptations of any nature, or do you feel like you're in control of them?
I don't necessarily feel that I fight a lot of temptations, but that might be maybe I don't realize it. I don't realize the temptations. Or, you know, I definitely don't watch ads on purpose. So I try to, as much as possible, get away from that. I don't watch TV. So there's, you know, in that specific regard, I can't get ads, so to speak, because I just don't watch it. And I guess in another way, I don't necessarily read the news too much, which you can say it's maybe a privileged, you know, status there, but I just don't for my own, just for my own mental health, to be honest, because everything in the news is like, so, you know, supposed to grab your attention. So every day the world is ending. So,
yeah.
So I kind of, got away from that. So, and outside of that, in doing yoga, in talking about different things, in, you know, kind of self-analyzing, I realized, you know, we talked about this, I think, in one of our previous episodes, for instance, for the beauty industry, right? Or, you know, even self-care, right? It's like a very profitable industry there. There's a lot of money into that to kind of tempt you, right? This is not good. You should do this. You should use this lotion. You should. So I figured that out at some point a while back. So it's not tempting necessarily. But I'm sure there are things maybe that I don't even remember right now or can't really, maybe, as I said, I'm forgetting right now, that probably are tempting. Just because we live in this society, to your point, you're bombarded with ads everywhere, on social media, everywhere, right? I try to ignore them, but you see them. And just overall, like people around you, right? What they have, it's hard, but I don't necessarily feel like I am very tempted, I'd say.
Yeah, I, on the contrary, I do. For some of us, you know, talking about the simple pleasures or the more complex pleasures that are not necessarily sexually related, if you have a very healthy relationship with food, for instance, you will not have cravings, or your cravings will be infrequent, you know, rather normal, and it's okay for you to give in to these cravings. But throughout time, I have found out that if I don't buy junk food or sweets or specific things that that are not good for my body, then if they don't lie around the house, then naturally I have no use of them. So I think we need to get better at controlling our environment. And at mastering these temptations, And the same goes for alcohol or for, you know, or for other things that might be bad for us, such as, I don't know, video games, or other types of things that are depleting us of our true energy. Not necessarily that we want to use this energy to reach to higher stages, like the old yogis used to do back in the day, but to use this energy for commonsensical and better purposes, such as you know, having a mind that's brighter, that takes decision more easily, that is sharper, for having better physical health, for having better mental health, for you know, for being more attentive, and all of that. So moving away from the energy stealers or from the energy vampires to mastering these energy thieves, so to put it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this concept called ojas. And yoga tells us that it's the most powerful energy, type of energy that we have in our bodies. And if a person has good ojas, he or she develop excellent mental and physical strength. The sense organs become more active and extremely sharp. And on the other hand, of course, if a person constantly loses ojas, for example, through sexual misconduct, we become, he or she, that person, you know, becomes subject to anger, to worry, and they get debilitated and develops a bad mentality. For in the case of men, ojas is lost through ejaculation. And this is, of course, in direct connection to Brahmacharya, to the concept that we are discussing today. So that is the point. As with everything, I feel, okay, if we do it, you know, if we indulge in pleasures every single day or tens and tens of times per day, they lose their value. If this pleasure happens or takes place, or if we rejoice in it more, how to put it, infrequently, then we are fully aware when indulging in it. We're happy to, you know, dedicate all our senses to it, and so on and so forth. One of my favorite cakes in the whole wide world is Isfahan. It's not a very common cake that you find everywhere. It's not something that's easy, you know, to bake. So I don't bake it. And I would honestly not like to, you know, have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. But every time I go out in this special place in Bucharest that I like, I try to, you know, this is like maybe a few times a year. And I deep dive into my Isfahan, into my plate, and it's an absolute pleasure. It's quite heavy, it's quite sweet, quite intense. So yeah, the fact that I don't have it so often makes me be aware of its value and really connect with the act of eating, indulging, and with this pleasure itself. So, you know, in the same way, you know, we can make a parallel with whatever's relevant for us or whatever we indulge in. Whether it's sex or food or, you know, going to a concert or, yeah, because if you go to a concert or if you listen to music in excess, then, yeah, I don't know. Whatever that means for us, plenty of examples.
Yeah, I think
you know, have a point, right? I'm just trying
But also, yeah, for sure, you know, it's known that... you know, if you don't do something very frequently, then the pleasure of when you do that thing, supposedly that you like, though, is going to be greater. I will sort of challenge a bit this to say that it's been proven that a good, healthy sex life contributes to a good health overall, right? And I don't know exactly the statistics, but I think it kind of contradicts a bit this point because I'm sure that promotes, you know, whatever regular, frequent, I don't know, as I said, I don't know exactly like the numbers, but definitely more than, you know, a few times, well, you were giving the example with the cake, but, you know, a few times a month or whatever, I don't know. So I think that's one thing maybe to also consider. Because I understand the part with the energy and conserving that and just making sure you don't indulge. But also you want to make sure you are taking care of yourself and your body and your mental health, and all the things are hopefully in union with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. It's healthy, for sure. It's healthy all the way. We just need to take care we don't exhaust, take care to not exhaust ourselves in it. And you know, ideally to use this energy with a special person that we are, you know, collaborating with, so to put it, because sexuality is actually an energy exchange, right? So ideally we should be very mindful about who we're letting in our personal space and who we are exchanging energies with. But this is also valid for other things apart from sex.
For sure. Yeah.
When having different types of relationships with different types of people, not only the person we're having sex with at that very moment.
Yeah.
They say the energy that is wasted in one sexual act is similar to the energy that's spent in physical labor for several days, or the mental energy that is used in mental work for 3 days, they say. So this is, you know, for men, semen is a very precious fluid. It's vital, and for them, it's something that they'd better be, you know, very careful about and not dissipate it incessantly. Also, the thing is that sexuality, they say, is you know, it's considered the main focus of Brahmacharya because it has such a powerful grip and such an influence of the human being. And it's considered that if sex is mastered, then all of the other senses are mastered as well. So they say if we are seeking answers sincerely, and if we are interested in spiritual growth, then continence, or at least being mindful about who we're spending energy and where we're spending it and how much we're spending, it should come easier. It should come easier to us. So it's normal that, you know, the basic life energy, the prana, right, as they say in yoga, it's normal that it's dissipated through any intense activity of the senses, and that it does thus it weakens the inner being. I'm not saying that this is easily achievable, and you know, the mind is like a vessel. If you don't put there what you know, the good intentions, it'll make sure that it goes astray, and all sorts of pessimistic and evil thoughts and temptations are there. So what I'm trying to say is we should make a conscious effort to direct this energy and our thinking to things that are more beneficial for us, rather than allow the mind to have its way and yield to temptation. So yeah, we try to keep the mind fully occupied, right? For instance, with mindfulness meditation, being aware of what we're doing, being one with the activity that we're doing at that very moment. So yeah, it's in our power to render the mind purer, I would say, through our actions. And as they say in yoga, energy goes where attention flows. So if we always pay attention to what's bad for us, then that's where the energy will grow. That's where the energy will go. So yeah, of course, if we think of yoga, when we practice yoga, and even physical yoga, when we simply attend a yoga class, right? Quite possibly practicing brahmacharya there is about not getting inspired by others to push our limits too much. Because it's so easy, right? If you look at somebody who's next to you and they do a handstand, you're like, oh yeah, well, I'm sure I can do this. So, and then we try it and then we harm ourselves. It's very easy to fall in this temptation, right? Depending to depending on how masters of ourselves we are or not. So of course that if we are surrounded with more experienced practitioners, we might feel the pressure to keep up, no? Of course. And even impress others, you know, I look good. You know, my handstand is perfect. You should be, you know, inspired by me. So yeah. But then of course we should be considering whether that taking that posture at that point is helpful for us or not. So because our practice is in fact about our bodies and about our minds in that moment. It's not about the others. So you know, on the other hand, the opposite remains valid. If we take just too little, and if we do too little, it's not okay either, right? We need to step outside of the comfort zone a little bit and see what we can do to improve every single day more and more, but with smaller steps, at a slower pace, you know, getting outside of the of whatever's familiar. Is what makes us grow, I'd say. Yeah. And also something that people forget, I think, we are the ones who know our bodies the best. We live, we inhabit our bodies, right? So, okay, I have this pain. The teacher doesn't know whether I have this pain. So it's my duty to protect myself and not go overboard in this pose, right? So yeah, that's how I see things. Be gentle, but don't be afraid to push yourself just a tiny bit. The right amount. Just the right amount of effort. Not too much, not too little.
The balance. Yeah. The balance there, right?
I think so. The balance. That's how I see.
It's hard to find sometimes. It's a fine line then you need to walk on. And I think that's probably the challenge. It's maybe easier to go to extremes, or I find it, or just swing from one extreme to the other, from not doing anything to doing everything, or things like that. It's harder to be like in between, also because that I think also means not so fast results either, right? If yeah. you go to one extreme or the other, you'll pretty much find out potentially pretty fast, you know, you're either injure yourself or it's going to be pretty bad because you're not doing anything. So it's going to be a fast outcome. Whilst if you walk the middle line, that's the longer, more, as I said, not immediate outcome path. So that can be a challenge also.
It you know, slowly but surely. As they say, if we have an injury, then it will only be a hindrance to the practice because we will need a lot of recovery time. And if we push through it, it's not okay. We need to allow the body to recover and be gentle and practice the other yamas and yamas, by the way, since we're on the topic. So the bottom line is, I think, you know, avoid excess, avoid overindulgence. And be cautious. How exactly you're spending your energy, how much of it, where, why, and with whom.
Yeah, I think that's a good advice in general. Just try and be aware of what's going on at each point, which is tough, but maybe just try and practice that and it can become easier with time. And then, realize, to your point, who you are spending that energy with, you know, what it is, and is it worth it?
Yeah, and there's this quite simple test, you know, I read about it everywhere. If you meet somebody or a group of people or a person, and after that, when you go home, you feel drained, lacking energy, anxious, you know, high in anxiety, depleted of energy, exhausted, then it's obviously that's not, for sure, it's not doing you any good, right? So you should just check yourself and see whether it's really bringing other types of benefits or it's just wasting your energy. Yeah, that's what Brahmacharya advises us to do. Not overindulge, I would say.
So I think that's kind of the main message, guys. Find the balance. Challenging, but at least, I guess, strive for it. And I think with time, it can get easier. Is it always going to be easy? Probably not. But it's something to just try and practice and focus on. And I think with everything else, to your point, you know, things will grow, will likely improve. You just need to stay consistent.
Yeah. That's how we evolved, by showing discipline and consistency. That's what yoga teaches us to do through its many recommendations.
Yamas and others.
Yeah, and other practices, indeed.
All right. I think that's it, right, Monica, for today?
Yes. Thank you to everyone watching. And of course, we will continue in the upcoming weeks with the Yamas and the Niyamas.
Yeah, absolutely. So stay tuned, guys. Thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time with a new episode. Bye, guys.